For some, the urge towards storytelling is nigh irresistible, an almost instinctual compulsion that, to the exclusion of all else, demands sating. Certainly, I am no stranger to such impulses. But, for reasons best left in the shadows from whence they came, after a series of long and rather stern lectures by a gaggle of attorneys and advisors, it has been made clear to me that I am no longer permitted to tell true stories. But, and though I could hardly recommend ignoring the advice of skilled counselors, I am not above occasionally bending their dictates just a little. But let us come back to that point presently. The relationship between storyteller and audience is necessarily distant, and in my case, necessarily more distant and lonely than most. But I should very much like to imagine it otherwise. So, I hope to have a particular conceit of mine indulged. Ensconced alone here in my writing retreat, high in the Alps and far from prying eyes and listening ears, sitting by my fire, I shall imagine myself holding court for you instead. Nevertheless, I find I must completely abandon the labels based on a true story, or even inspired by true events. But how much of a sacrifice is this, really? After all recollection is, in some sense, a species of fiction. With apologies to L.P. Hartley, the past is a foreign country. They do things differently there. But, with those disclaimers out of the way, perhaps we can indulge in a bit of conspiracy together, you and I. And if you are of a mind to indulge me, I will impart to you my mostly true and substantially accurate stories. I'm Isabella Valeri, and you're listening to Memories from Foreign Pasts. As a girl, I often found myself awake at night, all alone, listening to the subtle sounds of a slumbering home, and, as little girls may be prone to do, allowing my imagination what might have been an undue amount of latitude. But often, when sleep remained elusive for hours past midnight, I might resort to distractions when even the many books of our library failed to crack the facade of my ennui. On this particular set of late-night habits of mine, occasion a particular story, my second memory from a foreign past. Sometimes, I would drag a down comforter through the empty halls and sneak up to the spires that adorn the roof atop our home. From there, on a clear night, I could see for miles in any direction, or gaze into the brilliant skies that one can only truly appreciate in that rural dark, far from the lights of civilization. Sometimes, when even my stargazing became tiresome, I would sneak through the darkened environs of our home, wool socks on my feet to soften my footfalls on the cold stones of the hallway floors, pull a too large coat over my pajamas, and creep off into the woods on my own. During the new moon, or if the skies were overcast, the woods were blanketed in true country dark and nearly impossible to navigate without artificial light of some kind. But on a clear night, even the sliver of a waxing crescent moon would throw just enough blue-silver light through the trees that, with care, one could traverse the forests. And under a full moon, it felt almost like a pale species of daylight. It was one such brilliant night when, wandering in the woods leading up to the little meadow where the northern ruins stood, I saw the most shocking sight. Three tiny, golden lights seemed to appear, one by one, over the distant horizon where I suspected our property's wall marked the northern boundary of our lands. One by one, they emerged before bouncing about and spinning down towards the ruins themselves. There were many old ghost stories about the forests, some which had been told for decades, even centuries before I was born. I grew up with tales of domestics forever lost in the snowdrifts of our alpine blizzards, of hapless children falling into crevasses, never to be heard from again, of downed airmen, endlessly looking for other members of their long-dead crew, unaware that they had not survived the jump from their burning plane, and tales of stranger specters too. Mischievous things, pranksters, of will-o'-wisps, unforced spirits, and of darker shades, made of shadow rather than light, the sorts of things that lurked closer to our family mausoleum and hungered after the light on life that emanated from living beings besides. But the dancing lights I saw that night reminded me of none of those more malevolent and daunting phantasms. From where I stood, it looked as if they were cavorting together on the hills. I was spellbound. And as I watched, they spun and scattered before suddenly coming closer to each other, then appeared to turn and dart back behind one of the ruins' crumbling walls and disappear from sight. I did not quite believe my eyes, but the longer I looked, the more obvious it was to me that ghosts, sad and mournful things, were unlike to dance or frolic so. For a mostly rational little girl, interested in converting her observations into some understanding of the truths around her, there was only one plausible explanation. Fairies. I watched for a long time that night, but the dancing lights did not return. Of course, I was reluctant to tell my brothers about what I had seen. I knew my eldest brother would tease me, and my other brother would be more scared than I was. The following night, I went into the woods again and waited, but I found myself alone in the dark instead. I convinced myself that what I had seen the night before was only my imagination and tried to forget the encounter entirely. But the lights would not release me so easily. Naturally, on the next full moon, I found myself there once more, gazing from the edge of the forests into the distance and upon the northern ruins. And this time, lights appeared again. And three again. More fairies. Of course, the urge to get closer, to communicate with these creatures of light was powerful, but still not powerful enough to overcome my fear. Fairies could do mischief too, couldn't they? Before I could make up my mind, they were gone again, and I was running back home. I decided to tell my brothers finally, and after being predictably teased rather mercilessly, I convinced them to sneak up to the northern ruins with me the next time the moon was full. We dressed in all black, though my second brother ruined the dressing gown he wore underneath his coat by sneaking a slice of chocolate cake in his pocket. My oldest brother wore an old tuxedo jacket for some reason. Probably not the most practical thing one wears whilst crawling through the forest about the ruins late at night. But he was the eldest, and it was not my place to question him about his choice of attire. I am sure we were dreadfully loud. By the time we got to the small crest upon which the northern ruins were perched, we were all covered in scratches and brambles, and my second brother smelled strongly of chocolate. But the moon was bright, except for the occasional passing cloud, so we were able to see quite well. We settled in to wait, and my eldest brother was more than content to occasionally snicker and gloat as the hours wore by. If my fairies didn't appear, I was never going to be allowed to live down my outrageous claim. After the mourning period for his lost chocolate cake had passed, my second brother was absolutely petrified. That we were hunting supernatural beings had somehow escaped him before then and, gripped by the drama, he jumped at every little noise. Finally, as the night wore on and I began to dread the shame and humiliation I was certain would follow hard upon, we heard some soft laughter. And then the little light appeared from over the wall, just where I had seen them twice before. But this time, the fairies were coming closer. They were laughing and giggling, and sounded just like I thought fairies should sound. Until one of the lights dropped suddenly. Then I heard a soft curse, in French no less. But then, everyone knows that the first language of fairies is French, isn't it? But then, the moon, which had been behind a cloud for a minute, finally cast its full light on the ghostly spectre before us once more. The first thing I noticed was that the fairies were wearing school uniforms, the same uniforms of the girls that attended the boarding school far down and on the other side of the valley. The fairy lights were flashlights. And the giggling voices were just young girls who had snuck off campus and dared each other to brave the northern ruins. My eldest brother grinned, his teeth showing blue-white in the moonlight, and I knew what he was going to do. He waited until the girls were quite close before jumping up and yelling at the top of his lungs. The girls screamed in horror and ran away so fast the two of them dropped their flashlights. He looked a bit disappointed that they had fled. After all, he was of the age where girls had become interesting, and to have scared them off must have seemed a bit self-defeating in retrospect. Sadly, after that particular revelation, the mystery and magic of the entire affair faded away. But, as we would eventually discover, not entirely. Later that year, my eldest brother met many of the girls at the boarding school across the valley, and he was quite puzzled about something. To hear them tell it, that night we scared the schoolgirls off had been the first night any of them had been to the northern ruins. As before that, everyone had been away for summer holidays. The schoolgirls had gone hunting for the ghosts that, since the founding of the boarding school, had been rumored to live in that part of the estate. And so the mystery remained, and remains to this day. If the schoolgirls hadn't been there for the two full moons before we had frightened them away, what were the lights I had first seen? Here, from my writing retreat, it all seems a long way off and a long time ago. But now and again, when the skies are clear and the moon is full, I find myself back there, trekking through the forests of my ancestral estate, hunting for hints of the supernatural. And to this day, I wander after the boarding school girls who dared each other to some harmless trespass on our lands, and if they ever met the fairies of the northern ruins. I'm Isabella Valeri. Thank you for joining me for my second memory from a foreign past.